If given a choice between two things, you ever played that like would you rather kind of game before? Would you rather? Yeah. I want to ask you some of these this morning because I want to get to know the people in the room. Okay. I know many of you, but I'm just curious. These are real serious questions. So stay with me. All right. You ready? Here's the first one. Cake or pie? Who are my cake people? Okay. Okay. That's the third option. Hold on. Pie people. I'm in, oh, a lot more pie. Any, both people? Both people are a few. I think the pie people, we won. Good job. Good job representing well. All right, another important one, dog or cat? Who are my dog people? Oh, who are my cat people? Look at that. Okay, smaller contingent of cat people. Look at that. All right. All right. Preferred sport, football or basketball? Nobody likes baseball. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I had to put something up there people might actually enjoy watching. No. All right, football people. Okay, basketball people. Don't care people. Okay, I see those hands too. Thank you. Thank you. Golf. Somebody wants golf. Too many. No. All right, how many of you, this is like your preferred vacation? Nature or city? How many of you prefer a nature vacation? Oh, lots of hands. How many of you prefer a city vacation? I'm in the city crowd, I think. Very good. I like that. I like that. All right. This one's very important to me. It took me years to discover what I was for this one, but I think I finally know. On an airplane, are you an aisle or a window seat person? How many of you are window seat? What'd you say, Blessing? Window. All right. Let me see window people again. Aisle seat.
Gotta go to the bathroom.
Exactly. Exactly. I don't want to have to ask people when I need to go. Two more. Books or podcasts? How many of you love your podcasts? Oh, see, I tricked you. Amy, I'm sorry. We're in a slim minority here. Book people. Oh, man. All right. See, lots of those. And the most important question we have, and there is only one right answer here, Android or iPhone? How many of you are Android people? We'll turn around. We're praying for them. We're praying for them. iPhone people, stick those hands. There we go. There we go. How many of you would like to go back to the 90s to a flip phone? There we go. Yeah, no kidding. Keep this in mind, this choices idea. Keep this in mind. As we're coming to the end of the series that we've been in all summer called The Other Side, where we've looked at the story of Joshua, and we've looked at the story of the Jewish people as they were finally able to leave the wilderness and cross over into the other side of the promised land. And today, I'm just going to tell you, if you remember last time we were together, we were like in chapter 9. There's 24 chapters. So yeah, today we're covering 10 through 24. Buckle up. We'll be done by 2. That's okay. Just kidding. Just kidding. No, we're going to fly past some of the parts. And it's not that they're unimportant. It's just kind of things we've talked about before. There's, you know, a lot of the same. And then we get to a place towards the back half of the book where it's basically just the division of the land. And this tribe gets this spot and this tribe gets this spot. Again, important things happening, but we're going to just kind of pick up and get to the end because we're pivoting next week to a new series mainly. But where we left off last week, or 2 weeks ago, if you remember, the Israelites were in the land. They've defeated Jericho. They were defeated at Ai, and then they beat Ai. And then there was this group that came to them and tricked them. They outwitted them, the Gibeonites. And we discovered that even though the Gibeonites were deceptive in what they said, we saw that God's heart wasn't about destroying everyone or everything, but about using his people to reveal himself to the world, to reveal his heart to the world. And that's something that God continues to do through us today. Chapter 10 picks up with more battles and conquests. There's kings, they're coming against the Jewish people. Kings are killed. You read the northern cities are defeated, the southern cities are defeated. And remember how we talked about sometimes this is battle language that's used. It can be, you know, we killed them, we say in football. Well, we really didn't kill them. We beat them. Our score was higher than theirs. And so sometimes throughout Joshua, you'll hear, we absolutely, utterly destroyed them. And yet then you get to Joshua 13 and you read things like this. It says, when Joshua had grown old, the Lord said to him, you're now very old and there are still very large areas of land to be taken over. I myself will drive them out before the Israelites. So there's still people there. There's still things happening in the land. There's still going to be challenges and temptations there in the land that the people need to be aware of. There's going to be things that constantly tempt them away from the way of God to the way of the pagan gods of the Canaanites. And then in that chapter 13, there's a list of places that are yet to be taken. And then, as I said, you look at the rest of chapter 13, chapters 14 through 22, they begin to divvy up the land, and the folks who already had land on the other side of the Jordan were able to go back home. And they were commended and said, thanks for helping, go back home now. And then we reach the final two chapters of the book of Joshua. Joshua is a very old man. And we see here his final act and his final words of instruction to the people. Now, years ago, like in 2013, so before most of you were here, I actually did a sermon on this passage. It was in a series we did, Famous Last Words, and we were looking at all the times people spoke kind of the last time in the Bible. And you think about that, and you think, if you knew it was going to be your final time to address somebody, this would be pretty significant language, pretty significant words you would be using. You would want them to really pay attention. There'd be a real weight to what you were saying, and maybe even a challenge to them in what you're saying. And that's what we're going to find with Joshua. And so we turn to Joshua 24, and here's what we read there. It begins with this. It says, then Joshua assembled all the tribes of Israel at Shechem. He summoned the elders, the leaders, judges, and officials of Israel, and they presented themselves before God. Joshua said to all the people, this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Long ago, your ancestors, including Terah, the father of Abraham, and Nahor, lived beyond the Euphrates River and worshiped other gods. But I took your father Abraham from the land beyond the Euphrates and led him through Canaan and gave him many descendants. I gave him Isaac, and to Isaac I gave Jacob and Esau. I assigned the hill country of Seir to Esau, but Jacob and his family went down to Egypt. And then Joshua continues telling the story of the people. You see, there's a real significance. This isn't the first time it happens. In fact, as you continue through the Old Testament, telling the story of God to God's people is something that continually happens over and over. Remember, remember is kind of this idea. So Joshua continues in verse 5 and he says, God is still quoting the Lord here. Then I sent Moses and Aaron and I afflicted the Egyptians by what I did there and I brought you out. And then he spends some time talking about their deliverance from Egypt. And then what he does to kind of close this section is he closes by or continues by reminding them of not what happened previous to their lifetime, but also what happened during their lifetime. He says, I brought you to the land of the Amorites who lived east of the Jordan. They fought against you, but I gave them into your hands. I destroyed them from before you, and you took possession of their land. And then he goes on to describe other elements of their deliverance, these famous stories of deliverance, how God has over and over gone before the people and is the one giving them this land. And then he reminds them, I just want you to know how you got where you are. Where you are today, I want you to know how you got here. Verse 11 says this. It says, then you crossed the Jordan. You came to Jericho. The citizens of Jericho fought against you, as did also the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Canaanites, Hittites, Girgashites, Hivites, and Jebusites. But I gave them into your hands. I sent the hornet ahead of you, which drove them out before you, and also the two Amorite kings. You did not do it with your own sword and bow, so I gave you a land on which you did not toil, and cities which you did not build, and you live in them and eat from vineyards and olive groves that you did not plant. That's powerful words, right, from God. There's a reminder, you are where you are, not because of who you are, but because of who I am. That's what God is saying. I gave it to you. You didn't build these cities. You didn't plant these vineyards, but I gave it to you anyway. And this right here is Joshua's final appearance. He had much success as a leader of the Israelites. But in this moment, as Joshua is talking to the people, what he's not doing is saying, let me tell you my greatest hits. Let me tell you what a great leader I was. Now, that's something we see often today. People want to make sure they're tooting their own horn. Joshua isn't doing that. In quite the contrary, This was a time to remember all that God had done on behalf of the people. This isn't how great we are. This is a how great is our God moment. And when Joshua speaks to the people, he does so by telling them, this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. That's what he started this whole section with. And then he reminds them one by one. He says, you know what? I took Abraham and I led him. And he said, I gave Abraham many descendants. And I brought you, and he said, I sent Moses and I brought you out. And God says, I gave them into your hands and I delivered you and I blessed you and I gave you this land. You see, it would have been so easy for the people to feel so proud of what they had done. Look at this land. Man, aren't we special people? But Joshua knew. Joshua knew. It's not because of us. It's because of God. I mean, just look at that list on the screen. Those were all straight from that passage in Joshua 24. God took, God gave, God sent, God brought, God gave, God delivered, God blessed, God gave again, multiple times. Isn't that amazing? In certain spiritual formation circles, we call this gathering the graces. You heard that expression before? Maybe not. It's a newer one to me. Gathering the graces. Looking back at your life, where you are, remembering how you got there. Not just the good times, but the good times and the struggles as well. And then taking a moment to realize how God showed up in each of those moments. Have you done that before? See, it's easy sometimes to look at the good times, but it's equally important to look at the struggles. To gather those graces, to see what God has shown you and how God has revealed himself to you. One author I read this week talked about how we throw the word grace around a lot without a clear understanding. And then she went on to define it this way, as grace as the way God reveals God's self to us. How has God revealed God's self to you? What's interesting is that gathering the graces doesn't need to just be a mental exercise. Sometimes we're really good at that. Post-enlightenment, we really like to use our heads. We think there's something super special about knowledge and using our heads. And yet, when we gather the graces, when we pause and remember, we need to bring our whole selves into that process. Sights, smells, sounds, tastes. I mean, even this morning, Tim and I were talking about that song, There's Something About That Name, and he was telling me the story of somebody who had gone to a recording, and they played that song and recorded it on for a video or album. And as the guy left and he gets on the plane, they turn on the seatbelt sign and he hears, ding, 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 ding. We could look at that and go, oh, what an incredible coincidence. Or the next time you get on a plane and you hear that same interval, you may be thinking, oh, I remember. Jesus, Jesus, there is something about that name. That's the auditory. What about when you look and you see something, and in that moment, you're immediately transported to remember a place, a time where God has moved and intervened in your life. Maybe it was a painful time. But it was still a moment where God intersected your life and he became very real to you. And God knows for me, taste, man, to taste something and be transported to a moment where I've encountered God. That's what we're talking about here. Bringing our whole selves into this. To just to give you an example of this, even in this passage, we kind of ran right by it. But there's something significant in the first verse of chapter 24. That we need to pay attention to. It's the place where Joshua gathered the people, Shechem. Remember, these stories don't come to us in isolation. We read them as a larger story, a small story and a part of a larger narrative. And Shechem, there would have been echoes of Exodus and echoes of Genesis, even right here where this was taking place. Genesis chapter 12 is where we first see God call Abraham and make his promise to Abraham to be a great nation and to bless all the peoples of the earth through him. And Abraham hears this and starts moving. And look at this in Genesis 12. It says, Abram traveled through the land as far as the site of the great tree of Moreh at Shechem. At the time the Canaanites were in the land, the Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your offspring, I will give you this land. So he built an altar there to the Lord who appeared to him. Isn't that amazing? How significant do you think this would have been? These stories would have continued to be told about Father Abraham and where he built his first altar. And here we are at the place where that altar was built, and we're being reminded once again of the greatness of God. You think they might have felt that in that moment? You think there might have been a heaviness, a weightiness to this, where that altar used to stand, the land that they're now standing in that today they can claim as their own? You see, gathering the graces is a really important step. It's a really important step. Now, remember, we said we're going to be talking about a choice here in a moment. But I think before we ever get to the place of the choice, we need to pause and gather the graces and remember all that God has done. Often we do this great at the end of November. That's a wonderful spot to do it, at Thanksgiving. We stop and we say, what are you grateful for? But what if we made that a daily practice? In spiritual formation world, we call this the daily examine. Some questions you can ask yourself just to gather the graces of God every day. In fact, here's just a short, simple outline that you can use to help you do that. You begin by praying to place yourself in God's presence and give thanks for God's great love for you. Then you pray for the grace to understand how God is acting in your life, noticing the things of that day that he has been doing around you. And then you review the day. Recall specific moments. Recall your feelings at the time. Reflect on what you did, what you said, even the stuff you wish you hadn't done or said. Those things that were drawing you closer to God. Those things that might be pushing you further away. Reflect on those things. And then you look forward to tomorrow. Think of how you might collaborate more effectively tomorrow with God and his plan. And remember, this is more than a mental ascent, mental exercise. You can use your whole body. You can look at photos. You can take a look at your calendar from the previous day. You can listen to a song or a sound that is meaningful. You can eat something that is significant that reminds you of God's faithfulness. Somewhere along the way, we took out the body. Oh, the body's bad, because that's what Paul says over and over, even though that's not exactly what he's saying, that everything we do body-wise is bad. We need to bring the body back into our spiritual formation and realize God made us in his image to encounter him totally and fully. In fact, what I'd love to do just even right now is a little bit of this. For Joshua, God mentioned a lot of action that he did on their behalf. God says, I took, I gave, I sent, I brought. So why don't we just take 60 seconds? If you're comfortable, close your eyes. And I just want to ask you this. If God were to speak something similar over you this morning, what action would he choose? As he says your name, he says to me, Brent, I blank. What has God done for you? You don't have to share it out loud, but if you're comfortable, what's the word that God gave you this morning as you gather the graces of how God has been near to you? provide. What was that, Tim?
Delivered.
Chose.
Growth.
Forgave. Grew.
Shown.
Friendship.
Friendship. Isn't that amazing? No repeated word yet. And this is something I believe God invites us to every day. And this isn't that list I gave you, that daily examine. That's not an hour prayer time. It's 5 minutes max. 5 minutes, that's it. But how different might your day be if you paused noon, dinner, before bed, whenever, once or twice, and you just did that process. If you gathered the graces. Because here's the reality. God is moving all around us all the time. God is inviting us into his work in the world all the time. The question is always, are we noticing it? And what I love about what Joshua does here at the beginning of chapter 24, what God does for the people is he says, I want you to remember. I took, I brought, I gave, I sent, I friended, I provided, I delivered, I grew, I forgave, I chose. Take your pick. God wants you to know that. Now, the question is, why does God want you to know that? What happens in us when we are reminded what God has done for us? Is anybody encouraged? Does anybody feel a lifting up of your spirit? An encouragement? Yeah, because that's what happens when we do that. Absolutely. Let's keep moving. As we keep reading, we do get to that choice. We get to this line in the sand moment. And Joshua begins to speak to the people, and here's what he says. He says, now fear the Lord and serve him with all faithfulness. Throw away the gods your ancestors worshiped before the Euphrates and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. But if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, then choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve. Whether the gods your ancestors served before the Euphrates or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you're living. But as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord. Choose this day, a decision a little more serious than my cat versus dog example earlier. You could make the argument that choosing might be a little easier once you've gathered the graces and spent some time remembering who God is and all God has done for you. What's interesting here about the choice that Joshua makes before the people is it's not God or not God. We often think that's the choice, God or atheism, God or no God at all. But that's really, you know, and we may think, you know, that's the choice. It's not, because what Joshua is saying, did you catch it? It's God or other gods. God or other gods. Now, for us, in our enlightened Western 21st century mentality, we think, oh, wow, how primitive, God or other gods. But the reality is that there are many religions around the world that still do this. I don't know that he shared this last week, but Augustine shared with us during the weekend how many people in his country have no problem accepting Jesus as a god. In fact, on their walls, they may have pictures and images of gods, and they're happy to put Jesus just right alongside the other ones, just one of the many. We may think we're a little more sophisticated. Yes, we don't have pictures of our gods on the wall, but we do have them in our driveways and garages, and we have them in our bank accounts, and they're on our resumes, or the trail of bodies that we ran over on the way to power, success, and significance. They may not be on the wall, but we have just as many God options out there. And lest we think we are different and can handle all these gods at the same time, let me tell you, you can't. In fact, Joshua shares what Jesus repeats. It's one or the other. It's never both. It can't be both. We aren't designed for it to be both. In fact, Jesus makes this point in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 6. He says this, he says, no one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other. You'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. I think in our American culture, we need to be reminded of that last sentence. You cannot serve both God and money. And what's interesting is Joshua in the Hebrew and Jesus in the Greek, they use a very similar word, and we see it translated in both passages, serve. In fact, Joshua uses the word seven times in two verses. Who are you going to serve? What are we talking about? Is this serving dinner? No. It's to work for, to be devoted to. In fact, in the Hebrew, the word can even be translated to worship. To worship. Now, early last year, we did an entire series on this called Counterfeit Gods and on this idea. What we said then and even say now is we all serve something. We all serve something or someone, and anything can become an idol. And just because it becomes an idol doesn't make it bad. It's bad when it becomes the idol, it becomes a god to us. Martin Luther said it this way, whatever your heart clings to and relies on, that is your god. Sometimes we want to ask the question, what are you living for? And we think because we can answer that pretty easily. Oh, well, I'm living for God, I'm living for my family, I'm living for the good stuff. But maybe a better question we need to ask is what can you not live without? What can you not live without? What if it was taken from your life would be devastating or crushing if you didn't have it? What thing, if it were absent, would almost take away your desire to live? Those are the questions we may not want to ask, but they can be more helpful than what are you living for? And we ask them not because we want to heap guilt and shame on you, but to reveal we all struggle with disordered loves. We all struggle with disordered loves in our lives because these idols, these disordered loves, are never benevolent. They're never good. They often ask more of us than we ever think they might. And when compared to the demands of God, we're often willing to sacrifice ourselves and maybe even our families to this counterfeit God. And much of what these counterfeit gods, these idols, these disordered loves require of us is that without us knowing it, they slowly conform us into their image. When we begin to worship money, it's not just money that we worship, we become greedy. It shapes us. When we worship success, we become cold and callous to the needs of others. Ultimately, when we choose, what we do is we typically pick on what we believe will make us happy, what will make us satisfied, what will give us a fulfilled life. What we don't really consider, though, sometimes is what if the thing we thought would bring us life is the thing that's actually killing us? And that's what the disordered loves often do. After Joshua makes the statement, there's kind of a comical back and forth between Joshua and the people. Choose this day who you will serve. The people said, far be it from us to forsake the Lord to serve other gods. It was God, the Lord our God himself, who brought us and our parents up out of Egypt. We too will serve the Lord because he is God. He is our God. And then Joshua says, no, you won't. Joshua says to the people, you're not able to serve the Lord. He's a holy God. He's a jealous God. He won't forgive your rebellion and your sins. If you forsake the Lord and serve foreign gods, he will turn and bring disaster on you and make an end of you after he has been good to you. Joshua's not trying to talk them out of it. He's reminding them of the seriousness of the decision. This shouldn't be taken lightly. Again, echoes of what Jesus says later in the New Testament when Jesus says to people, who builds a tower without first counting the cost? He's talking about following him. He says there's a cost here. You want to make sure you count the cost. You continue to read, and Joshua says, you know, you say you will, but no, you won't. The people say, yes, we will. Joshua says, okay, if you say so. The people say, we say so. And then there's more back and forth. It's kind of funny. And eventually they make a covenant for the people then and there. Joshua pushes back on the people because he wants them to know this commitment's not going to be easy. There's always going to be something competing with our loyalty to God. In fact, we've talked about this in our message meeting. I don't know that I want to keep doing these series through the Old Testament because after Joshua comes Judges. Anybody read the book of Judges? It is one depressing book. Here it is in a nutshell. The people turn from God. Bad things start to happen. They get attacked. The people go, oh my goodness, what have we done? Oh, help us, help us, help us. God raises up a judge. The people repent and turn back to God for a season. And then the people forget God and repeat. Just like that for an entire book. There's cool stories in there. There's a fleece in there that gets wet and not wet. There's Samson in there. There's some cool stuff. And Deborah, a judge, just so we know. But that's it. There's always something fighting for our loyalty. And in Judges, you see that for the people here, they struggle with their commitment right out of the gate, right from the get-go. There's also something interesting here too as well. It shows us that even in our own lives, there comes a moment we have to choose. There comes a moment we have to choose. Here Joshua challenges the people. Even with Jesus, I was thinking about this. There's this moment in his ministry. The crowds are following him. He's fed thousands and thousands of people. And then there's this moment where he makes this really interesting statement. He says to the people, unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you can't be my disciple. And wow, talk about a line in the sand moment for following Jesus. And we read that the crowds began to dissipate. They began to walk away. Jesus says to his disciples, does this offend you? Yeah, it did, Jesus. But from that time, many of his disciples turned back and no longer followed him. These are the sermons we don't like to preach because we want to be happy and we want to talk about the love of God, which is very real. But there's also a time where we have to choose. God or not God. God or the idols that sit out before us that continue to draw and seem very appealing. And Jesus is saying the same thing. It's Jesus or not Jesus. It's Jesus or all the other things that life promises us and vie for our attention and allegiance. We face the same choice that Joshua and those people faced as well. Choose this day, who is it going to be that we serve? What's interesting about Joshua's phrasing, it's not choose and you're done. Many of us grew up with that kind of a faith. Oh, just do it one time and all's good. No, it's choose this day. And guess what you do tomorrow? You choose that day. And guess what you do the next day? You choose that day. It is an ongoing, regular recommitment that we make to following Jesus. Joshua spoke to them as one who had already made his choice. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And as he says that, he's saying to the people, join me. Join me. And this is another important aspect of it. It's the communal aspect. Yes, that line is an individual commitment, but it can't stay there. It moves from an individual commitment to communal commitment. We need each other. We will either pull each other up or bring one another down. Even just this last week, having conversations with my 9-year-old about the friends he runs with in the neighborhood, saying they will either lift you up or bring you down. And this choice, this daily choice also moves forward. This is an important aspect. This is a generational choice that has generational impact. Have you thought about that? I sit here today because my mom and dad were committed to Jesus. Maybe in spite of the fact that my dad was a pastor. Can I get an amen from the preacher's kids? But, Dad, if you're listening, I'm just kidding. But because of who my parents were, and they raised me to know, love, and follow Jesus. And why did they? Because their parents did. This is a generational thing. And just to say, and while imperfect, I stand on the shoulders of generations of people who said, as Joshua did, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And I look forward to knowing the fact that there could be, will be, generations to come that stand on our imperfect shoulders as well. The book of Joshua closes like this. After these things, Joshua, son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died at the age of 110. And they buried him in the land of his inheritance, at Timnath-Serah, in the hill country of Ephraim, north of Mount Gaash. Israel served the Lord throughout the lifetime of Joshua and of the elders who outlived him and who had experienced everything the Lord had done for Israel. That's the end. We started with remembering and gathering the graces. Maybe the question we close with today is this: what is competing for your affection? What do you choose? Let's pray.